Blog Talk Radio.
This is the post-game show, ladies and gentlemen. The United States travel down to San Pedro Sula and lose to Honduras by a final of 2-1. It was an absolute dreadful, disgraceful performance in the second half by the U.S. that allowed Honduras. I'll be honest, it was a free shot, and Honduras converted, and they take the first 3 points of this hexagonal tournament in 2013 with Thurl Reitz, Daniel Feuerstein, Franco Panizo of MLSsoccer.com will be joining us a little later on. And Earl, it's really a disgraceful performance. I thought Klinsmann, he did not put his subs in at the right time. I thought he looked a little nervous when he put in his subs, but people are absolutely questioning the starting 11 from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the fact that he had Jeff Cameron and Omar Gonzalez at the back, and it was kind of a risk-reward situation, and the risk definitely came out in this one because the back line never seemed particularly settled. They seemed a little bit lacking confidence at times. You saw Jeff Cameron get beat on a ball over the top there in the second half that they had a real good chance to score on, and there were a couple other chances that they were fortunate maybe to be able to convert on an offside trap and you know, keep Honduras from scoring from that. But just in general, not only from the standpoint of a defense that maybe lacked some experience, but tactically, you ended up having a team that was very narrow without any real creativity in the center of the pitch, aside from one probing Jermaine Jones floating cross, which netted the lone American goal. So this was not Klinsmann's best game by any stretch, and you know it's definitely, you know, it's not the end of the world for the U.S. They still have, you know, they lost one on the road. You do that from time to time in these types of situations, but you know, to get away from San Pedro Sula with a point would have been, I don't want to say optimal, it would have been very good. You know, optimal would have been 3. Getting out of there with nothing is very disappointing, especially when you look at the talent that the U.S. has at its disposal, and you look at Honduras, and you would have to think the U.S. is probably the better team if you take all of the players and all of the talent that they have. And it just didn't happen in this match, especially once the goal was scored for the U.S., then it just kind of all the creativity pretty much went away.
Yeah, absolutely. There. And the sad thing is this, is that the U.S. had chances. The team had chances, and either they weren't taken well or they were deflected or they just missed the post of the crossbar. The U.S. had at least a good 2, 3, 4 chances to get in there and to at least go more than just a goal up. But unfortunately, I think they had a decent first half. And in the second half, it just started to fall apart slowly but surely. The mental lapses were very large. And Jeff Cameron, Omar Gonzalez, unfortunately, along with maybe Tim Howard a little bit, you know, they got... It was just a big lapse of communication as well as concentration, and Honduras gets their second goal of the game.
Yeah, I was in a little bit of a back and forth on Twitter with Richard Farley, who used to host Major League Soccer Talk podcast. And, you know, he wanted to chalk this up to just, you know, you're playing better opponents in Honduras than what you did in the previous round. And I think it's more than that. I mean, they just did not look confident. You know, when you had in the previous era, you had, now, I mean, granted, the U.S. has always had its issues. I mean, and they didn't squander or concede a goal in the first 15 minutes this time around, which they seem to do a lot in previous, you know, like in the 2010 World Cup cycle, it was kind of like a lot of that. But I don't know. Maybe now is the time to make those mistakes, but, you would hope that they wouldn't make as many as they did, and there were, quite a few, and a few that didn't end up costing them. I thought in the first half they might have been lucky to only be drawing 1-1. And actually, I would say the goal that Honduras scored may have been a little bit fortunate for them. But there was a little bit of a relaxation there, and, the overhead kick by Garcia was a beautiful thing, but there were some breakdowns, I think, in covering the cross and, just a lot of players with a lot of time. So you said disgraceful. I don't know. Right there, they're showing on the highlights another goal that was called off because they were both offside. You play the offside trap and you hope that you catch a couple of those and prevent a couple goals. But, they did not look very together in the central defense as well as the outside back. There's got to be some improvement when they come back to Jacksonville with, I believe it's Jacksonville with Costa Rica. No, that's... I was looking at the U.S. soccer website. I'm not sure. I forget where Costa Rica is being played. Is that Kansas City?
They're going to be playing at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, Colorado.
Oh, in Colorado. Yeah, well, when they get there, things have got to be tighter. They can't go through what they did this time. I mean, said disgraceful. It's pretty close to disgraceful when you've got guys with experience that you might have been able to call on to help steady things when they got equalized.
Absolutely. I mean, well, first of all, the goal by Juan Carlos Garcia in the 39th minute, 3 minutes after Clint Dempsey put the U.S. ahead 1-0. Yeah, the defenders could have done a little bit better on the defending of the cross, but the shot was so unstoppable, you could not really, unless Jeff Cameron really put his face a couple of inches closer to the ball to probably block it and get a concussion just to sacrifice himself. Other than that, unstoppable goal.
Well,
you cannot stop that one.
I'd say the first half, probably 1-1 was pretty fair. Like that goal that you're talking about was probably a little bit unfortunate for them that they, it was a really quality shot from Garcia, like you said. Those don't go in often. A lot of times they're either skied way over the bar or mishit or anything like that. And instead, he hit it perfect. Howard didn't have any opportunity to react. But there were a couple chances that Honduras had where they didn't convert. And that was probably a fair score line at the break, 1-1.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the time you're thinking 1-1's a fair result at the half. And the way that the U.S. was sort of defending, more of attacking, but sort of defending, you felt at least the 1-1 result was probably going to stand until that little blip of not really a good time for the U.S. to give up a goal like that, especially on a mental lapse and just, allowing Honduras to get a free chance on goal. And they converted it. Honduras did what they had to do. They were at home. And I think this is the first loss in Honduras in a while for the U.S. because the last few times they faced Honduras in qualifying, it was a 2-1 victory by a Clint Mathis goal for the 2002 World Cup. And then it was, of course, the trip to South Africa. Landon Donovan and Connor Casey converted on goals to make it 3-2 U.S. It's just one of those things where we know that Honduras is an up-and-coming opponent. We know that they're getting better and better as the years are going by. Things are going well for Honduras. But when you allow Honduras to get a free shot at a goal where you're mentally declining in the match, especially with guys like Cameron and Gonzalez, and then you have to question Jürgen Klinsmann on the starting 11. Bocanegra's not getting any time with the club that he's on loan with because he's not playing for Rangers at the moment because of the whole debacle with the Sky. Then you got to send him somewhere where he needs the necessary playing time, that you need your captain to be out in the field to bark out orders.
Well, and the thing is, for me, I'm watching that final goal that put the nail in the coffin in this match. And, you know, the ball gets played through in front of Tim Howard. He wasn't able to get there. And you see Omar Gonzalez kind of like jogging back towards it. I mean, if you see a ball heading near your goal, I mean, I don't know about myself or I don't know about anybody else, but I think I'd be sprinting towards it as fast as I can to try to clear that sucker off the line. And he just kind of like jogged towards it, looked around to see if anybody was, and Benson ran right by it. And, you know, where is the killer instinct? I mean, to me, I saw a lot of tiredness, a lot of, a lot of these players play in Europe. You know, you're going from 40s, 50-degree weather, speaking in Fahrenheit and, you know, United States terms, 95-degree weather down there, you know, and you know, where's Jose Francisco Torres or, Hercules Gomez, who play in Mexico and who have a little bit more experience with these and have been playing. You know, all of these MLS guys, you know, their playing time has been minimal. They've gotten some time in the camp, but, you know, I don't know. I think Klinsmann messed it up on a number of levels, and, you know, he's going to have to hear about it for the next month while his team, while he tries to figure out what he's going to do for Costa Rica.
Well, Earl, the question now becomes this. You've got two qualifiers in March. You're going to be hosting Costa Rica, and then you're going down to the Azteca against Mexico. And let's just say hypothetically, they get nothing at home or a point, and they get nothing in Mexico. Does Jurgen Klinsmann get fired after the month of March?
If they get... Did you say they get nothing at home?
If they get nothing or a point at home against Costa Rica and then Mexico and they lose at the Azteca, does Jurgen Klinsmann get sacked at the end of March?
If they get a point at home and lose on the road, no. I don't think Sunil Gulati is quick enough at the trigger to do that if they had a point. If they lose to Costa Rica and to Mexico, you could see a situation like with Sven Göran Eriksson with Mexico where they would pull the trigger because you're talking about, at that point, completely jeopardizing. I mean, you know, even a point at home, you're pretty much putting your chances to qualify for Brazil on the skid. But, I mean, if they get nothing, if they go 0-3, something's got to be done. I mean, you've got to start questioning or at the very least, you've got to go into Klinsmann and say, what's wrong? What do you need? And he needs to come out and either ask for a tactician to help him get things right, because right now he is not. He put out, Phil Shane questioned the team. I think a lot of people questioned the team he brought in. Part of this is also due to when they scheduled this. I mean, this is difficult when you're talking about, you know, you bring in guys on a Monday for a Wednesday game. I mean, they've had very little chance to prepare, and maybe that's why he brought in so many MLS players. But it's easy to second guess him. But yeah, I'll tell you what, if they lose against Costa Rica, there will be a lot of there will already be a lot of calls for Klinsmann's firing at that point. I mean, if they get a point, there'll still be a lot of consternation. But again, I don't think Gulati would be so quick to pull that trigger at that point. But you're playing with fire at that point.
Yeah, you probably are. But still, though, I mean, this is a game where, I mean, you're correct. I mean, it's only a couple of days. I mean, you had to go play. Most of these guys are probably playing with their club sides. Some of the guys came into this camp in that friendly against Canada over in Houston. If you really think about it, it just felt like there was no urgency in this game. I mean, there was something going on in the first half, and they got their goal, and then all of a sudden they just could not defend the cross. You couldn't really – I mean, a bicycle kick like that, you just can't really stop that thing. But as the match moved along, and you felt kind of confident at the half that the U.S. could probably take a point out of Honduras, throughout the entire second half, it just seemed like Honduras was waiting for their opportunity. Honduras was waiting to pounce on a very big mistake by the USA, and they capitalized on it, and they converted. And before that goal came, the U.S. had many opportunities to take a 2-1 lead. They had some opportunities to go forward and to lead in the match, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I think there seemed to be a little bit of gun shy. You saw Michael Bradley. He had a pretty good game, I would say, largely, but there were a few chances that he had where he could have, kind of wheeled back and taken a strong shot at goal, and he kind of passed up in order to try and be more creative with it, and he never ended up getting a chance. He had a few of those. He had a chance, I believe, what was it, 29th minute. Eddie Johnson played a nice cross that Altidore, I think, got a foot on or something, but it just went over. I took some notice. Dempsey had that shot that was blocked at the last minute by Garcia. The U.S. did have some chances, but in large part, they didn't. I mean, I don't think they won the possession battle in this match. I don't think they created nearly enough. They did have, I guess, I'm looking at the stats, 10 shots. Only two of them ended up on net.
Yeah.
That's not nearly enough, especially when you're getting, like 7 corner kicks, it says. They didn't really have any kind of aerial dominance in the attacking zone at all. Those are areas where you would see someone like Bocanegra really come to the forefront. I mean, I guess you saw Omar Gonzalez in the final, in the MLS Cup final, be able to score off a corner kick, but you really didn't see anybody rule the box on any of those set pieces. And there were a couple set pieces Michael Bradley took that were, frankly, abysmal. I mean, just left you with a sour taste in your mouth. Like, what are you spending your time doing? That's all you've got. You know what I mean?
You got a call on the line, 661-748. Your name and what's your name, sir?
Hey, boys. Chris Webb here.
Hey, Webby. How's it going?
Hey, Webby.
What did you think about the performance today, Webby?
Well, honestly, it's exactly what I expected because going back to the semifinal round of qualifying, they looked terrible in almost every one of their road matches. You also got to throw in the fact this is the first game of the Hex. It's away. They've got MLS out of season. They've got European players coming in on short notice, and I realize I'm rolling the excuse train into the station here, but these are factors. Honduras, for the most part, had their team together and played in a tournament just a few weeks ago, so big advantage to them. Plus, I think Honduras is a talented team. I think we need to give more credit to Honduras as opposed to just ragging on the U.S. at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that there, Webby. I mean, that's very true. This team's been together for the Untapped Nations Cup, the Central Americana Cup, getting into the Gold Cup for this summer. I'll definitely agree with you on that there as well, Webby. This team has been together a lot more than the U.S. has. Obviously, only Roger Espinoza is playing over in England for Wigan. But I do agree with you there, Webby, that this team has been together a little bit longer than this current qualifying group for this play.
Chris, the other thing I was thinking was, I would have thought that Klinsmann would have learned his lesson as far as this three defensive midfielder set. And he's pulling it out yet again, and there's just no creativity in that midfield. There's no way to link up with the forwards. You didn't get the one ball to Dempsey, but without having anybody out there getting any width to cross in, I mean, there's the forwards are pretty much silent. You heard very little from Altidore. You heard very little from Johnson unless he came back into the play. I mean, when is Clemson going to learn his lesson?
Well, their creativity is sitting on a couch in Manhattan Beach, California, pondering his future. And, it's no excuse for the team to go out there and look so poor and lethargic. But, I can't really put my finger on it. There's going to be tons of second guessing. There's going to be people who want, Klinsmann's head on a stick, but he's only, this is what he's got to work with. And quite frankly, it's not good enough. And I predicted before the game that they weren't going to win this game. And I did it based on the fact that I really like the Honduras squad and the way that they play. And the U.S. has, for the most part, recently, you know, they've been really up and down in their performances. And, you know, I'd be a little more worried if this was the sixth or seventh game in the 10-game series and they looked this poor on the road. But, you know, look, they've got a tough opening schedule. Three of their first four games are away from home. They're most likely going to come out of their first four games probably a maximum 4 points. And, you know, but, you know, they'll still have four of their, what, six remaining games at home where they can bank. You know, they're going to put themselves in a deep hole, but I believe at the end of the day they're going to do well. And I'll just make one more point before I jump off, fellas. There's going to be a lot of teeth gnashing about this, you know, Gonzalez and Cameron pairing. Look, we have to find out at some point if these guys can play together. And would it have been more prudent or practical to play Bocanegra today? Probably. But, you know what, you got to put these guys to the fire. You got to get them that experience. And last time I checked, Negra was awful when he was playing against Antigua and Barbuda in central defense. And, you know, he passed the time. So you got to find options. You got to get them, you know, blooded to the system. You know what, we're going to take some time. And we're going to lose. You know, we lost today. We're going to lose the next one. I don't think we're going to lose those three. I think we'll somehow rebound to get a win. It won't be rich. Oh, you got to remember, this is a World Cup qualifying. They don't give you, you know, extra points or, you know, free kicks from 40 yards. It's all about results. But at the end of the day, they will.
Yeah, Webby, I agree with you there. I mean, we're going to have to find out about some of these guys. I'll admit this, though. I thought Omar Gonzalez actually played a decent game. I really thought that he was okay in central defense. The problem towards the end of the match was a bit more mental. Maybe he was fatigued. We'll never know. But I would say it was more mental there, Webby. That's what I thought it was more about when they coughed up the second goal.
Well, that might have a lot to do with fatigue. They were playing in some pretty tough conditions. You got to remember, all these people for the U.S., at least half of their, most of their team has been playing in cold weather in Europe. And, you know, as far as I know, it was, you know, it was upper 80s, humid as hell. And, you know, that's usually July, August conditions that we see here in the U.S. And, you know, it's February. You know, I just want to kind of reverse the tables here. Every single, well, actually, the last two qualifying rounds, when Mexico came in and played the U.S. in cold weather city and went home with a pair of 2-0 losses, for their Mexican fans calling for their coaching head, were they saying their World Cup was over? No. You know, so I implore my fellow U.S. fans to have a little patience. It sucks. It hurts. They look terrible. But you know what? It's a process. It's a 10-game process. They're not going to be eliminated from this thing until the 9th or 10th game of this series. And if they do get off to a bad start, it's still going to take that long before they really know what they're going to need. And I think they'll get it sorted out. Doesn't look good right now in February, but come see me in October and, you know, see what's going on then.
That's true. We're going to have to, you know, there are 9 matches remaining. They got to go and face Costa Rica over in Dick's Sporting Goods Park, and then they got to make the trip down to Mexico, and then, of course, Jamaica, Panama, and then home against Honduras in June. And then, of course, it's back all over again in September and October. But there is plenty of time left for the U.S. to try and salvage. I wouldn't say salvage, just at least trying to get on the right track, because I think this home game, Webby, is very key for the U.S. against Costa Rica. It's very key right now, and hopefully they can get 3 points against a Costa Rica side that is probably in the same boat as they are right now.
Well, yeah, you tell me how Costa Rica is going to react to, you know, upper 20, 30-degree temperatures at 6,000-foot elevation. Their lungs are going to be burning by the 15th minute of the game, okay? So it all works out. You know, I think the U.S. has a tremendous advantage in the next game. They can right the ship and get a win. They're right on track.
Absolutely. But overall, though, it's a little bit disappointing. You thought they're going to pull out at least a point out of this one. And, Earl, like Webby said, Earl, you know, there's nine games left. And even you said it, too. There's nine games left in the schedule now. We've got the two games in March. We got the marathon in June. And then the two matches in September and October. And the U.S., in a certain way, still has plenty of time.
Right. Well, and they, you know, you're going to have Omar Gonzalez, and you would imagine in better shape, you know, being with the Galaxy and playing for a couple of weeks, more informed than what he was this time. You know, everybody's going to have, you know, and it's the top three, and even the fourth place team has just a playoff against, like you said, Oceania. Winner. So, you know, it's definitely not the end of the world. It's just there are a lot of turning points that you hope get all sorted out by the time March comes around and Costa Rica and Mexico matches are on the horizon.
Very true. And, you know, once again, it's just here, I'm live here at the Football Factory at Legends in New York City. I got our fellow MLS Talk podcasters, Earl Reed, Chris Webb. And once again, the United States losing by a final of 2-1 to Honduras. Honduras at the moment, top of the hex with 3 points. Other two matches on later tonight, of course. Mexico hosting Jamaica. Costa Rica taking on Panama. And once again, I think for the first time ever, hexagonal qualifying in the final round, we're seeing the U.S. in the bottom third. And I, to be honest with you, Earl, we're not used to seeing the U.S. having a start like this.
No, but, you know, this was an odd situation where you had a lot of guys from MLS, you know, that were just in this January camp, and then a lot of guys from Europe, and you're having to play a match in extreme conditions in the month of February. They only had a couple days to train together, and then you're expecting them to go out there and play a 90-minute match. This is a strange case, and like Webby said, you know, Honduras had a chance to play in a tournament recently together, you know, trying to get into the Gold Cup, so, you know, there's just a lot of things conspiring against the U.S. in this match, so, you know, like Webby said, maybe we need to just, maybe I need to not be so pessimistic about things and just look forward to Costa Rica and just, you know, hope that Clinton gets things sorted out and has a better, you know, the team plays better in conditions that are more suitable to what the players are used to at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. Webby, wanted to ask you this. Did you find it a little strange how quickly Jurgen Klinsmann had used all his subs? I mean, it felt like within a 10-minute period, boom, there's the first one. Boom, there's the second one. Boom, there's your last one. Did you find it a little strange how quickly he made his subs?
No, I think he probably saw his team dragging ass in that second half, barely hanging on, and just had to get fresh legs on the field. You know, ideally you want to keep, you know, your last sub out because, you know, if a player takes an injury, you know, late in the game, you could be playing with 10 men. But I think the conditions drove this entire thing, and I agree with Earl. I think there was a lot of stuff sort of going against the U.S. into this game. And granted, you know, we can't use that as an excuse because if you want to be one of those top tier national team programs, you have to play above all of this crap and still get results. And this is where people from Europe go, well, you get to play El Salvador and Honduras and you know. And small teams like that, you know, they still call these teams minnows. You know, the fact of the matter is that the rest of the region has caught up to the U.S. and Mexico. Mexico is clearly the number one seed in this region. I think the U.S. has taken a couple of steps back because they have not really developed many players, you know, on the Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey level, you know, since Landon Donovan, you know, DeMarcus Beasley and those guys were prominent for the U.S. and the other nations have gotten better. So, you know, there was going to come a point where the U.S. was not an automatic shoe-in for qualifying, and I felt going into this qualifying that this would be their most difficult challenge since, you know, they've started making the World Cup regularly since 1990, or 1998, rather. And, it, you know, that is bearing itself out right now. It's up to the U.S. to counter this and figure out a way to get through, because it's not easy sledding anymore.
No, it's not. And I want to – this is a question for both of you. Webby, we'll go with you first, and then Earl will go with you. Landon Donovan did not want to make the trip to Honduras. Landon Donovan wanted to continue to rest up and probably prepare for this MLS season. Has Landon Donovan, in your mind, in your guys' opinions, and we'll go with Webby first and then Earl, do you think Landon Donovan made a serious mistake in not being a part of that camp to play Canada and then go down to Honduras?
No. Look, Landon, look, he's served his country well. And whatever he wants to do, I'm fine with. If he doesn't want to play internationally anymore, it's his choice. He is the best player this country has ever produced by miles. He's been the U.S.'s flag bearer for, you know, 2 World Cup qualifying cycles. I think he will eventually come back, because I think the fervor and the cry to get him in here will become, especially after this loss, will definitely come. The other side of the coin is, you know, Landon Donovan doesn't play defense. You know, just, you know, Timothy Chandler. You know, there were 3 guys playing their first cup of qualifier in anger. They were Gonzalez, Cameron, and Chandler. And you can make a case that all 3 of them were pretty poor today. And, you know, but I'm also willing to say that if those 3 attack, given the experience of the qualifiers, they will put in performances like this. So that's Landon Donovan. But no, I'm not, you know, begging him to come back, because he's not the panacea. He has bigger problems than just Landon Donovan not being in the squad.
Well,
yeah, I wouldn't go, crawling to his feet asking him to come back. I would hope maybe Landon sees this kind of a result and says to himself, you know, they still probably have a use for me. And even though maybe I didn't quite get along with, I don't know if he got along with Clemson or not. I kind of get the impression maybe not, because he decided to go and take this break and they haven't had much contact and whatnot. But, you know, he might say, gee, they need me. You know, my country needs me, and, you know, I'm going to be ready come. You know, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. But I, if I were Clinton, I would not go seeking him out. I would let things, come about as in name. You know, eventually you're going to be without him in the team, you know, down the road, and you've got to develop players at some point. So, you know, you're giving some players a chance, like Graham Soucy. I would have liked to see Soucy do a little bit more in this match coming off the bench. But, you know, some of these players have got to find it in themselves, too, to be able to, pick it up a little bit and do what it takes to get out, you know, get these points, get a couple goals, and, so the torch isn't passed to an extent, and, you know, someone's got to step up and take control of this and say, this is my team. You saw Dempsey try, you know, do a little bit of that in this match, but he also floated in and out of it a lot, too, so... Anyway,
yeah, that's the big question right there. Obviously, who's gonna be the players to stand up for the U.S. or at least try and stand out? Because Landon Donovan's not there right now. Maybe he'll be there for the games against Costa Rica and down in Mexico. But the truth is this: you gotta find defenders that are gonna have to stand up. I got a peanut gallery over here, but anyway. But anyway, you know, it's the defenders that are going to have to stand up and actually, you know, do a job for the U.S. to get into Brazil for this upcoming summer. But once again, you know, the conditions were harsh. We all know that. And the other thing that we're talking about as well is that, you know, is it now the time to move forward without Landon Donovan? And if it is so, then, you know, then these guys are going to have to step it up. These guys are going to have to go out there, and they're going to have to not just prove it to Klinsmann, they're going to have to just also prove it to themselves, and they're going to have to prove it to the fan base, because the U.S. soccer supporters are, I can tell you right now, I'm here at Legends in New York City. They weren't happy what happened here this afternoon in the second half. They thought the second half was an absolute meltdown. They didn't like what they saw.
Well, Daniel, the other thing about it with Landon that we maybe didn't touch on much is the leadership aspect of it, too. And with Bocanegra on the bench, you needed someone else to step up and provide that leadership. That's really what this team is. Landon Donovan does not come back for, let's even say, until the summer. Someone's got to step up and be that leader. You kind of saw, I mean, I'm not sure if Tim Howard can do that from way back in the back in a screaming stadium of 30,000 or however many people were there in Honduras tonight. You know, I'm not sure he can be that vocal in order to rally these players around. You know, you had Bocanegra for a while. You kind of thought maybe Beckerman was being that in this January camp, but he wasn't even called in to Honduras. So, you know, I don't know. That's where Donovan's, you know, he probably wasn't the most vocal leader, but I do think he was a presence there, and that's really what's going to have to step up as well, not only from the point of creativity and scoring goals, but also to, you know, be a calming influence when things aren't quite going your way, because it looked like they just kind of scrambled around there, especially after the equalizer and then also after the second goal. They never really got a solid chance even after that, which you'd think would be kind of the firestorm in there trying to barrage a goal in order to try to equalize that match.
Yeah, it's very true there, Earl. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's just one of those things where you're expecting things from other players, and it looked like they were answering, and then when you get toward the latter stages of the match, especially late in the second half, it just wasn't there. And once again, the U.S. falls to Honduras by a final of 2-1. You have to, and Webby is correct, you have to give credit to Honduras for playing such a solid game. They really did do a great job on how they wanted to manage the match. I mean, if you want to say they got lucky on that first goal, if you want to say it, that's fine. It was a well-taken goal to make it 1-1 in the first half there.
I wouldn't say they were. It was a lucky goal. I would say that the U.S. was probably unlucky to have that kind of a goal scored in that situation. Yeah. It was a great feat of skill by the Honduran player, and you know, you have to give him credit for attempting that. I mean, that was the only way there was going to be any kind of a chance put on goal, and you know, he struck it perfectly, and Howard had no opportunity to do anything with it.
That's very true, because that was a hell of a shot. Rifled him right in there, and Timmy just couldn't do anything with it. Earl, I know you got to get going. If you want to stay a little longer, it's fine. So, Earl, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Daniel.
No problem. This is, once again, the Special Forces Fire Net Soccer Show. I'm live here at Legends in New York City. Once again, the USA falls to Honduras by a final of 2-1. I'm with Chris Webb. Webby, you know, we've talked everything that we can about this match, and I guess the main question is going to be about what's the U.S. going to have to do moving forward. Who is available to possibly replace certain players if you feel, well, I feel like Omar Gonzalez is going to get another shot and they're going to play against Costa Rica. Maybe he's learned his lesson. But just in case it's not Jeff Cameron or Omar Gonzalez, who do you see either playing in Europe or in MLS that might deserve a shot at center back?
At center back? No, I don't see anybody else. If anything, Bocanegra will slip in there, and one of those two will go out. But there really is no other options at this point. And you know, that's part of that is Klinsmann's fault, because he just hasn't developed anything good. I'm sorry, Clarence Goodson, decent player, but you know, he doesn't do it for me. Oguchi Onyewu is way past his sell-by date. The U.S. just unfortunately is very thin in central defense, so there's not really any help there. And as far as any other positions on the field, I mean, I think Steve Cherundolo probably could have helped today. A healthy Steve Cherundolo, he's currently injured. That certainly hurt. You know, they need a little more speed out there on the field. They're just too predictable. I don't understand when Jurgen Klinsmann goes out and picks three defensive midfielders out there. I you know, it didn't work in Jamaica. It didn't work here. I don't understand why he continues to go with that. But, you know, I'm not the coach. He is. So I'd like to see some improvement there. Maybe put the other team on their heels for a bit. I mean, the U.S. just basically sat back the entire game, really didn't apply much pressure. And it was just, I don't know what they were expecting outside of maybe trying to keep this scoreless. But as I said, Daniel, before, this team has been poor defensively going all the way back to the last round of qualifying. They're just not a very good defensive team. And, you know, this is sort of, I'm not really used to this because, you know, you go through the 98 and the 2002 qualifiers, and, you know, they barely even gave up 8 or 9 goals total throughout the entire qualifying process. And last time around, they gave up like 18 or 20 goals through the process. They gave up a lot of goals, particularly free kick goals in the semifinal rounds previously to this round. And then they give up another world-class goal on a bicycle kick. I don't know what it is about the U.S. just giving up these ridiculous goals to their opponents, but it seems to follow them around like a black cloud. And, you know, there's only so much you can ask of Tim Howard. That, you know, every road match, every road qualifier, they're asking him to bail the team out. And you just simply have to find a better way. And I'm not sure they have the horses to do it right now.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see, I guess, who's going to be able to come to the pipeline. Joining us right now, Percy of MLSsoccer.com. He writes it for the Red Bulls, for the Red Bull site. Of course, it's Franco Panizo. Franco, better late than never, but from your perspective of this match, what were the problems you saw in this 2-1 loss to Honduras?
I don't know if you guys touched on this a little bit earlier, but, I mean, Jurgen Klinsmann's tactics today were definitely not suited for the team to play well. As you can see, not many Americans looked sharp out there. They were out of sync. There was no real threats from the flanks. You know, very narrow again, and the team just is not suited to play that way. You know, if you're going to play that way, maybe he should go with a 4-4-2 with two guys up top, because, you know, keeping someone like Josie isolated up top like that, you know, he's not going to see the ball unless he's got good service, and that negates, you know, his goal scoring abilities. Also, Clint Dempsey playing him out on the flank like that, you know, in the 4-3-3 formation, he was almost invisible out there. He scored a big goal off of a sublime pass from Jermaine Jones, but aside from that, I mean, did we really see Dempsey do much? I mean, I can't say the answer is yes to that. The team just looked lost. The team just looked sloppy, both sides of the ball. And Jurgen's decision to really bench Carlos Bocanegra, the U.S. captain for most of the cycle since Jurgen's taken over for this game, and put in someone like Omar Gonzalez, who has had, you know, just 3 caps to his name prior to today, is baffling. You need someone who's been through these type of conditions, who can organize the back line, who can lead by example, and the U.S. didn't have that today.
Yeah, that's very true there, Franco. The U.S. didn't have it today. The formations and the tactics did not work in this type of game. And the U.S. got, sadly, a 2-1 loss down in Honduras. But once again, Franco, there's 9 games left. But I asked this question to the panel before. Let me ask you this. If Klinsmann gets a point in these next 2 games, if he gets a draw with Costa Rica at home, and they lose in Mexico, does he get fired after the March matches?
It would depend on the performances. Sunil Gulati, U.S. soccer president, is not going to be the type of guy that will just pull the trigger, you know, just off of, you know, three bad results. I mean, it would really depend on the performances. And even then, I'm not sure if, you know, he would make a change this late in the cycle. You've got 7 games after that. Is that going to be enough time for a new coach to implement his style and convince the guy that he's the one that's going to you know, right the ship. I mean, it'll be tough. I mean, U.S. definitely in a tough situation now with today's loss. You know, a draw would have been perfect. You know, a win would have been better, of course. But now they're in a pretty much a must-win situation at home on March 22nd against Costa Rica. Because after that, you know, they're heading to Azteca, where, granted, they did win last year in a friendly, but again, it was a friendly, and you know, Mexico is going to be looking to repay the favor after having suffered that loss. So yeah, I can't see, you know, Sunil letting Jurgen go, but I mean, it's definitely not a good situation for U.S. soccer right now.
No, it definitely isn't, and I mean, I don't know what will happen. Just, I'll agree with you, Franco. I don't think Gulati's going to fire Jurgen. I think he's going to keep him for the entire 2013 qualifying games, the Special Cup that's coming around this coming July. And, Webby, you know, what would you think? Do you think that – would you see Sunil make a change this early in the qualifying, kind of late in the game, kind of, sort of?
Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay, Franco. Yeah, I don't see this happening because, for one thing, they're paying them an ungodly amount of money to get them through. And also, I mean, you look at their schedule. Their two hardest road games are two of their first three games. Okay? I mean, you get that out of the way. And granted, they've been awful on the road in qualifying, but you feel a little better about going to Jamaica. You know, they still have to go to Costa Rica, where they've never won. So that's another terrible place to play. But, you know, granted, I know they've won games in Honduras the past couple of cycles, but, you know, you look at some of those games a little bit closer. They weren't any different than tonight. They just, you know, Honduras misses a penalty kick, you know, in like the 90th minute, which would have, you know, given them a tie in the 3-2 eventual win for the U.S. So, you know, these things go back and forth. I mean, granted, sitting here today, right now, we're not in a good position. Jurgen can't feel good about what he's doing. And tactically, I think he's all over the place. And, you know, Daniel, as I said before Franco came on, the three defensive midfielders things, it stifles what they should be doing. And, you know, I don't understand where they're going. But to answer, you know, to give you a long-winded answer for your question, no, I don't think Klinsmann's going anywhere. Because, you know, after that, you know, three road games out of their first four, they play four out of six at home. And that's really where teams are made in this qualifying process. And, you know, if the U.S. can get maximum points from four out of those five home games, then they're in pretty decent shape.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we just have to hope and see if Jurgen's going to turn it around, see if this team's going to turn it around. Franco Panizo, of course, from MLSsoccer.com, writes on the covers of New York Red Bulls for MLSsoccer.com. Franco, what did you feel about Omar Gonzalez's performance? I mean, we keep talking about how great he is in MLS, how solid he is in MLS, and after all the injury, obviously the ACL injury he suffered training in Germany, did you feel he had a solid performance or a decent performance outside of, I'll call it a brain fart, to allow that second goal? Did you think he had a good performance or no?
It's tough to say he had a good performance given how weak the U.S. looked defensively. I'll say that he's not as bad as some people are making him out to be. I mean, he never really got, aside from that goal, he never really got torched or beaten one-on-one. But, you know, just the organization of the back line, you know, the way they were holding their line, it was just very off. And but that's what you come to expect from someone who's played three international games for the U.S. prior to today. And again, I know I touched on it earlier, but it's a big question mark. You know, why sit Bocanegra out in this game and put Gonzalez in his place? You know, Bocanegra has had some time to gel with Jeff Cameron in the center of the U.S. defense. And, you know, just throwing in Gonzalez there changes it all up. Now you've got, you know, Timmy Chandler, who's pretty much been out of the picture for most of the last, you know, year and a half, you know, making his second start for the U.S. since November, still getting used to, you know, the new backline teammates like Jeff Cameron. And you needed someone with experience, someone who's played in these road qualifiers, knows what it's like to have to get through when the chips are down. And, you know, putting Gonzalez in that spot was a tough ask. And it's definitely that one definitely falls on Jurgen. I wouldn't say Omar was terrible today, but he definitely wasn't good. But that's what you can expect when you have someone with that much inexperience starting in an important road World Cup qualifier.
Yeah, I'll definitely agree with you on that one there, Franco. Other than that, I felt that the U.S., they looked good at times. They did look bad at times, and when the bad came, it was really bad. But I'll say this, though, Webby, when the U.S. had their chances to at least go up 2-1, it was in, Michael Bradley, you know, who plays for AS Roma in Italy, and who's a big cog in the part of the offense for Roma, I don't know. I mean, some of the shots he took, they just didn't seem he had enough power behind the shots. He tried to finesse it in there. Michael Bradley just didn't seem to be himself, you might say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He did not see himself today. And, I consider him this team's captain, basically, and the guy to take over, you know, after Landon Donovan has been pretty much the team leader for a while. And it's a bit disappointing, but I think this was more, guilt by association today with everybody else around them. And Franco, I wanted to ask you a question real quick here, you know, in regards to your comments about Gonzalez and the experience. And while I agree with you that, you know, the experience of Bocanegra is important, how does Gonzalez get that experience or get this atmosphere if he never plays in these games? If we always defer to a player who's past his prime and, you know, we could have seen the same exact performance out of Bocanegra today than we did out of the central defense, and it wouldn't have made a lick of difference, in my opinion. I've seen enough horrific performances from Carlos Bocanegra that he wouldn't have been the answer today to their defensive woes. But, you know, these guys, Cameron and Gonzalez, if these are the guys that we have targeted as the future central defenders, we've got to play them and we've got to stick through it.
I respect the opinion, but I would wholeheartedly agree. Bocanegra, for all his, you know, limitations and what have you, and being the finished product that he is at his age, he would definitely be able to organize that back line better than was done today. Jeff Cameron and Omar just looked completely out of, not on the same page. You know, they would step at the wrong time. It just did not look like a cohesive defensive unit, and obviously that's always been the case. They've never played together before today, even in training. How much time could they actually have had together? I mean, a day, maybe two, of being, you know, side by side. It's just, you know, Bocanegra is what he is. You know, he's a cerebral guy, not the most athletic, not the quickest, but his position awareness is great. That's why he's been in Europe for so many years. That's why he's made a good career for himself over there overseas. He could have organized the backline a little bit better. And as far as getting Omar integrated, getting him reps, you do that with a couple more friendlies. You do that, you know, maybe in a home qualifier when your other options are maybe injured or out of form. You slowly integrate him. He's brand new to the international game. He played the last time he played before this Canada friendly in an international game was 2011, excuse me, in a January camp. I mean, he hasn't really experienced the international game, and especially throwing him into the fire during a road World Cup qualifier, it's just a tough ask. And, I mean, you saw the second goal. He was running towards the ball, decides to look back to see where the attacker is, and that's just completely the wrong play to do. You just keep going for the ball. Him turning back, you can see it on the replay. When he turns around and looks at the attacker to see where he's at, that slows him down. And once he does that, it's over. Bankston just finishes, gets to the ball first, and just taps it in. Well, Omar has to slide. It wasn't a good performance for him. And you don't. I don't agree that you start him in this tough of a situation.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. I think my point I'm trying to make is that it will serve both of them and the national team better in the future for going through experiences like this. And I don't think you can get that from playing against Canada or other friendlies where there's literally nothing attached to it. I mean, there's nothing like facing live bullets. And granted, he got shot up pretty bad today. But again, I think this will serve him and it will serve the U.S. better down the road.
Yeah, I will definitely agree with you both there. Omar Gonzalez, definitely. Sooner or later, you're going to have to throw these guys into the fire, and once they get a taste of what it really means to be in these type of situations, then they can probably perform a lot better. Or maybe you throw in Omar Gonzalez, not now, obviously, but maybe the last Gold Cup, maybe he probably should have made the team back then in 2011, and that probably would have been the best time to use Omar Gonzalez to be in a Gold Cup tournament to see, you know, what's going on. And once again, it's just a situation. Klinsmann just unfortunately got it wrong today, and you hope he learned from that error that he can improve against Costa Rica and, of course, try to bring that same magic down to Mexico.
Well, I think you certainly can blame Klinsmann for not giving him enough time, but let's also remember that Gonzalez missed pretty much the entire semifinal round due to an injury, and I think we all would have agreed that he would have been playing if in most of those, if not all of those games. And that did not help his cause. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, we're both right and we're both wrong, I guess, in a sense here that, you know, I'm willing to take, you know, a couple of shots to the gut right now if it's going to make him a better player down the road for both club and, you know, for both the U.S. and hopefully when they get to Brazil. I'll take those bullets right now because one loss right now at the beginning, even two losses out of the first three games, is not going to eliminate the U.S. So even though it doesn't look good right now and nobody's feeling good about the performance that we saw today, there's still a very long way to go.
Yeah, I
agree that, you know, he's better served for having experienced, you know, a Central American qualifier today. But I don't agree you take the bullets, as you're saying, during a World Cup qualifier. You're risking qualifying for the World Cup. Okay, yeah, they have nine games to go, but you don't know how the balance could fall. You know, you get one bad call. You know how referees are in Central American qualifying. You don't risk that by putting him in a game of this magnitude just to get him his feet wet. You have friendlies for that. You have a Gold Cup this summer for that. You know, Germany is a rumored friendly in May or June. I think that's a pretty big task, and it's a friendly, so it's meaningless. That's a game where you can put him in there. If he gets beat, he learns his lesson, but it amounts to nothing in the end. Today, they lost points partially because of Gonzalez's inexperience, and that's not something that I think the U.S. team should have really gambled on.
Well, that's absolutely a fair point, but I'll also add to that, I don't think just him alone is the reason why they lost. Again, this was a group effort. They were poor across the board, and, you know, he just happened to get singled out for some pretty poor play that I think this experience will serve him well, and I understand your feeling that, you know, you can't afford to do that. I think in the first qualifier you probably can. You know, but if this was a winner or you're out of the World Cup type situation and he was playing his first game, I would agree with you 100%. But, you know, obviously we just agree to disagree on the situation.
Yep, definitely, guys. Well, listen, Franco, Webby, thank you very much for the time. Webby, I'll talk to you soon. Franco, I'll see you at Red Bull Arena this year.
Yes,
gentlemen,
sir.
Take
Thanks
care. Thank
me.
You for the time. No problem.
All right, boy.
All right, guys. Be good.
See ya.
Be good. Thanks a lot. That's, of course, Franco Panizo, Chris Webb, and, of course, earlier Earl Reed being on the show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. This will be the end of this post-game show here as, once again, the United States falls in their first final round match of 2013 to Honduras. They lose by a final of 2-1. Clint Dempsey with the golden goal for the U.S. in the 36th. Juan Carlos Garcia in the 39th to make it 1-1. And then Jerry Bengtsson in the 79th off a very terrible miscue by the U.S. to make it 2-1 Honduras. That is that. Join me this coming Tuesday and the next three Tuesdays. MLS 2013 preview shows. Every single team in MLS gets previewed. And since this show also covers the New York Red Bulls and has a Red Bull Hour, a one-hour preview of the New York Red Bulls 2013 season, of the upcoming roster and everything else that goes on. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening today. As always, please enjoy your football. Join me on the MLS Talk podcast with Earl Reed and Robert Hayes Jr. Whenever you can on MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com. Thank you very much. And as always, enjoy your football, everybody. Take care.